Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur is found in the middle of Daf Mem Beis Omid Aleph, at the beginning of the new perek, the eighth perek of Soita, perek Moshuach Nuchama. We recommend, before learning the perek, to study the psukim in the Torah in Sefer Dvorim, Perek Chof, Psukim Aleph through Tes. You will find there the Chumash speaking about the Jewish nation entering a battle, and the Kohen Moshuach Muhammad, he's a special Kohen, I would almost say a type of Kohen Gadol, who is charged with issuing instructions and, let's say, words of encouragement to the soldiers of the nation of Israel before they enter battle. There are several stages of, we'll say, instructions and things that he has to say, as is featured in the Chumash, and we will see more about that, of course, in the Gemara. So, we are introducing this because, in fact, this is a continuation of the Mishnah at the beginning of the seventh perek, where there was a list of different rituals, different things that need to be recited specifically in Hebrew. Of course, in contrast with those things that could be said in any language. Moshuach Mechoma, the words of the Kohen, you will see in this Mishnah, like we learned previously, must be said in Hebrew. Now the Mishnah. Moshuach Mechoma, b'shoh shemedaber el ha'om, the anointed Kohen, who's anointed for battle purposes, as we already indicated, when he speaks to the people, he speaks in Loshon HaKodesh. B'Loshon HaKodesh hoya medaber shenemar. The pasuk says, V'hoya kekorovchem el ha-milchoma v'nigash ha-kohen. Ze kohen Moshuach Milchoma. The pasuk says that when they draw near to battle, the kohen then approaches the assembled, the soldiers. That's a reference to the kohen Moshuach Milchoma. Moshuach means anointed. He's anointed for this purpose. V'diber el ha'om, v'loshon ha-kodesh. From this pasuk, we're supposed to see that the speech that he gave was restricted to Hebrew. How you see that in the pasuk is something that the Gemara will take up in its opening discussion. V'omar aleihem shma Yisrael. The pasuk goes on to say, "Atem kravim ayoim lemilchoma, al oyevechem." That's the pasuk. He says, "Hearken unto these words. Listen, nation of Israel, you are drawing near to battle against your enemies." The term oyevechem is to the exclusion velo al achechem, and not we'll call it a civil war, not a war against other Jews. Why mention the contrast? The Mishnah will spell it out. Unfortunately, and it's very tragic, that throughout the history of the Jews, as is reflected in the Tanakh, not that the Book of Prophets is a book of history, but the prophets do reveal historical events, And in the various books of the prophets, of the Nevi'im, you find very tragically civil wars with numerous casualties. Even so, the Kohen Moshiach Melchama contrasts. He says that the battle that we are going into, in other words, these are the battles that the Moshiach Melchama is given charge to address the soldiers. Lo Yehuda al Shimon velo Shimon al Binyamin. The war that we're going into now, says the Moshiach Melchama, this isn't the war of the tribe of Judah fighting with the tribe of Shimon, or Shimon fighting with the tribe of Binyamin. Sheim tiplu biyadam, if one falls captive into the hands of the other, when it's Jew and Jew, yirachamu aleichem, there will be an element of mercy. Kama shenemar, as the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim says, and here we have a long quote. It's about five lines of pasuk quote. Vayokumu anoshim asher nikvu b'shemos vayachziku b'shivya. The pasuk describes an internal battle, and the designated men arose and they took captives. V'chol ma'arumehem hilbishu min asholol. V'albishum ve'anilum, all of the captives that were without clothing were then clothed, given shoes, given food, v'yashkum, given drink, v'yesuchum, smeared with oils, v'yenahalum b'chamorim l'chol kosheil, and all those that couldn't walk were provided with donkeys for transportation. V'yavim yirecho ir hatmorim etzalachem v'yashuvu shamron, and then they were brought to Yericho, the city of dates, to their original tribe members, and they went back. They were returned. Al oyevechem atem holchem. This is what the Kohen Moshiach Melchama tells him. If I'm addressing you, you realize that this is a battle against Gentile enemies. Shem tipu biyodim ein rachmim aleichem. If you fall into captive into their hands, there's not going to be any sign of mercy. And therefore al yirach levavchem, al tiru v'al tachbezu v'al tarzu mitneim. The posuk says, "Do not be faint-hearted, do not be fear-struck, do not be overwhelmed," and the phrases in this pasuk, each one of them is a reference to some source of fear that one might have. For example, Al yirach levavchem, do not be faint-hearted, mitnei tzolah susim v'tzichtzua charovois, because of the whinnying of the horses and the clanging of the swords. Al tiru, do not be fearful, mitnei hagofas tresim v'shifas hakalgasim, the banging of the shields and the masses of soldiers. Kalgasim are troops, soldiers, and shifas may very well be from the root shefa, means plenty, many, the multitudes of soldiers. Al tachbezu mikol kronos. Al-Tachbazu is another expression meaning to be emotionally overcome from the sounds of the Kronos, the horns, the trumpets, the horns that were used in battle. Al-Tar-Tzu ibnei kol tzavachos, and don't be overawed by the screams. Ki Hashem Elokechem ha'olechim ochem, the pasuk says. The Kohen Moshiach Melchama tells them, the Almighty God is going with you. Haim, and here we contrast between the Jewish soldiers and the Gentile, the heathen soldiers. Haim boim b'nitzchein shalboser v'dom. They're coming with their victories that were accomplished by people. V'atem boim b'nitzchein shel mokom. You're coming with the victory of the Almighty. In other words, they're relying on human strength, and you are in reliance upon the Almighty. And actual examples, Plishtim bo benitzchonos shel Golias, the Plishtim people came relying on the victories of Golias or Goliath. Maho Yosofa, what was the end of that? Of that individual, Lisof Nofal Bacherev Venoflu Amo. Eventually he was slain by the sword, and his people fell with him. Bnei Amon Bo'u Benitzchonos Shel Shovach. Shovach's the name of a military warrior, and he had been associated with the Ammonites. And Mahoyosofa, what was his end? Lisof Nofal Bacherev Venoflu Amo. He fell to the sword and his people as well. Va'atem mi'atem kain, but you are not the same. Ki Hashem Elokechem ha'hoylech imochem li'lochem lochem v'chulei. The Almighty is going with you to fight, to battle alongside you. Ze machne horon. This is the camp, the assembly of the Holy Ark. This is a reference to the idea that the Holy Ark went accompanied the Jews into battle. The Gemara asks regarding the supposed proof in the Mishnah that the words of the Mashiach Muhammad were in Hebrew from the Pasuk V'diber El Ha'am, my Ka'omar. Where do you see in this Pasuk any reference to Hebrew? Answer, Hachi Ka'omar, thusly the Mishnah is saying, Shenemar V'diber. With regard to the Moshuach Milchoma, you see the word v'diber used. Ulahalon oimer Moshe yedaber v'elu kim yanenu b'koil. That is the pasuk referring to the giving of the Torah, where Moshe spoke at the time of the giving of the Torah. Ma lahalon b'loshen akid. Just like the giving of the Torah was done in Hebrew, af kan, so too the words of the Moshuach Milchoma b'loshen akodesh, also in the holy tongue in Hebrew. Tanu Rabbanan. The Tanaic source featured here quotes from Dvorim, Perek Chav Pasuk Beis. It says, V'nigash ha-kohen v'diber el ha'om. Yochol kol kohen shiyitze. It says that the kohen shall draw unto the assembled and speak to the people. When it says kohen, does it mean any kohen? Talmud Lomar. There's a pasuk very nearby, pasuk hey. This is just a couple psukim after the pasuk we just quoted. It says, V'dibru ha-shotrim. Shotrim in modern Hebrew is translated often as the police. Shotrim are in effect the power, the governmental power that is charged with executing the decisions of the judiciary. Very likely the police. So the Shotrim were also given a role in the pre-battle address. And what do we know about Shotrim? Ma Shotrim b'memune, just like the Shoter is someone that is appointed. It's an official position. It's not just anyone coming forward. Af Kohen b'memune, so too, when reference is made to the Kohen, he too is an appointed individual, not any Kohen that comes along. You can see a new marking, a double underline, and it's featured under the Mivneh, the structural note on the side, V'eimo, that's the highlighted word, She'elos birur de Kohen shetzorach ledaber hu hamashuch mochama v'lo mishu acher. These are questions of clarification to ascertain that the Kohen spoken of here in the Chumash is actually the Moshuach Milchoma, not someone else. So the Gemara asks, V'emo Kohen Gadol, once you're saying that you're dealing with a Mimune, an appointed one, so maybe it's the high priest that does the service of Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur service in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara responds, Dumya Deshoter. The Kohen in this section of the Torah, Perek Chof, is a kohen similar to a shoter, a policeman. Ma shoter sheyesh memune al gabov, just like a shoter is someone that has someone above him. Af kohen sheyesh memune al gabov. So too the kohen spoken of, it's a kohen that has someone above him. In the case of the shoter, the one above the shoter is the judge. The kohen spoken about here cannot be the kohen gadol because that's the top man. So we need someone above whom is someone else. The Gemara asks, well, why do you rule out kohen gadol? Kohen gadol nami ho'iko melech al gabov. With regard to the kohen gadol, there is a power above him, and that's the king. The Gemara says, that may be true, but ba'avoidosoi komar, within the realm of priestly work, there is no one above the kohen gadol. V'emor sgan, maybe the kohen that dresses the soldiers is the sgan. The sgan is an office that we've seen referred to before in the handing of the Sefer Torah, in the case of the kohen gadol, on Yom Kippur, so it was previously given to the Skan. He is reason for being is that in the event that the Kohen Gadol becomes disqualified to serve as Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the Skan would take over. So the Gemara says we can't say that the Moshuach, that the Kohen spoken of in the Pasuk, is the Skan. Skan lav mimunahu. He isn't really appointed. There's no actual office that he holds. The sanya. Omar Rebbe Chanina Sgan HaKonim. Here's a man who himself was the Sgan. His Rebbe Chanina, a Tana in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Lema Sgan Mimuneh. For what purpose is the Sgan appointed? Shim Ira Boy, psul b'kohen gadol nichnasu mishamish tachtov. In the event that the kohen gadol is disqualified because of some type of disqualification, whether it's a blemish that emerged or a form of defilement, so then the sgan takes over. But until that point, he does nothing. So we can't compare him to a shoter. A shoter is a policeman who has a current role to fill as a policeman. We're therefore looking for a kohen who currently has a role to fill, and hence the skan does not fulfill that criterion. The Omar Alehem Shema Yisrael, the kohen Moshuch Muchama, opens his comment using that expression, Shema Yisrael. You can see, we saw this in the Mishnah, on the fifth line of the Mishnah. The Gemara asks, "My Shno Shema Yisrael." Why does the Torah tell us that his opening words are Shema Yisrael? He could have said Ha'azinu. He could have said any number of opening expressions to draw their attention. What's significant about these words? Omar, Rabbi Yochanan Mishum, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Omar Lohen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Yochanan quotes Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hu as saying that the Almighty says to Israel, Omar Lohen HaKadosh Baruch Hu Israel, Afilu lo kiyamtem el kriya shma shachris varvis, I atem nimtsorim biyodam. This is a fantastic Maimer Chazal. It could very well be a secret weapon for Jewish armies to be aware of. And what the Almighty is saying, that if I know that there are many sinners amongst my people, and it's now a time of battle, which is a very dangerous time, people's lives are at risk. The Almighty announces that if all you had by way of merit, by way of mitzvah fulfillment, was the recitation of the Shema twice daily, in the morning and in the evening, you will not be given over to your enemies. What a wonderful thing to be aware of. And wouldn't it be even better if this could be implemented under all circumstances, maybe even as a military order? Al yerach levavchem, al tiru v'chulei, tonu rabbonan, pamayim medaber imam. There are two addresses, twice, the Kohen Moshe Milchoma addresses the people. Achas basfar v'achas ba'milchoma. One at the Sfar. The Sfar is the border. In other words, they're about to leave, say, the land of Israel to go into battle, but they're at the border. And the other, Milchoma, is actually in the, at the battleground. Basfar Mahu Omer, at the border, the earlier stage, what does he say? We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Shimu divrei ma'archei ha'milchoma v'chazru. He says, listen to the war regulations, and he who is fit to return to avoid going into battle should do so. Rashi at the top, Shimu divrei ma'archei milchoma, mi roi lachzor, or mi roi leilech. Who is fit to return and who is fit to continue into battle? The Chazru Haruim Lafsor, and those who are fit to return can do so. Kagon Bona Bayas Vinotakorim Vihiras Isha Viyore Varachalevov. These are all points that are mentioned in the Psukim. Someone who just built a house, just planted a vineyard, just married a woman, someone who is weak, faint hearted. Rashi points out that when you look into the scriptures themselves, you will see at this point that the shotrim are addressing them. Later it's explained that in truth it was the Kohen that addressed the people, and the Pasuk making reference to the shotrim simply is that they made it audible. In other words, they heard the Kohen Moshuach Milchoma, and they, the Shotrim, we'll say, spoke as a human public address system. They made it audible to the masses. Let's continue in the Gemara. B'Milchoma Mahu Omer, the second stage of talk of the Moshuach Milchoma when they're in the battle or approaching the battleground itself, what does he say? Al yerach levavchem, v'al tiru, v'al tachbazu, v'al tarzu. Four comments, four words or expressions of, we'll say, of encouragement. Now, these four expressions are keneged arba dvarim she'ovdei kochavim oisim. These are, it's four against four. Four actions that the heathens, the enemy, do. What do they do? Magifin, umriyin, tzvachim, v'roimsim. They bang their shields. They blow on trumpets. They scream out in their own voices, and they make a stampeding, trampling noise with their horses. Now, there's a certain amount of detail that Rashi brings out that one might miss in just reading the Gemara. So let's take a look together at the Rashi on the fourth line from the top. Al yerach levavchem, al tiru v'al tachbazu v'al tarzu. Arbo azoros, these four azoros literally are warnings, where the Kohen Moshuach Milchoma is saying, do not be faint-hearted, do not be fear-struck, etc. These four warnings These are four actions that the idol worshippers in battle would do to impose or to reflect fear. La'ayim. That's an important word. What are the four actions? Magifin betrayson, they bang their shields. Umarian bekronos, they trumpet in their horns. Utsvachin bekolom, they scream out battle cries. Veroimsim Vitzalas Sayan Vidaroisam, they make stampeding noises and horse cries that can be also a source of fear. Avol Tzichtzua Harovas Vishifas Kalgasim, these are two points that were mentioned in the Mishnah, but you don't see them in this Brisa. The clanking of the swords. Tzichtzuach, in other contexts, means shining up. Could be like the sharpening of swords, where they would rub one on the other, and thereby making a clanging noise. That, and the other point, Shifas Kalgasim, the stampeding of soldiers. These are not things that are done le'ayim. Hein ikur ha-milchoma ve'enon le'ayim. Those are the mainstay of battle. That's how battles take place. Clanking of swords and stampeding troops. So that's not something that we can describe as a fear tactic, and therefore the Brisa that we read doesn't include these two points. The Gemara continues. Plishtim bo b'nitzchoinu shel Golias. We recommend learning the book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin. As is always the case, when learning Gemara, it's assumed that the student of Gemara is familiar with the Chumash. That is certainly accomplished by careful study of the Parsha of the week. In addition to the Chumash, there's also the reference throughout the Shas to the balance of the scriptures, the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim. That too is something that the study of Talmud assumes. Many of us haven't done that before learning the Gemara, and at least to a type of compromise that we strike is, at least before a given section of Gemara, to be familiar with the, we'll call it the storyline that you find in the scriptures. And here, we highly recommend learning that Perek Yud Zayin and Shmuel Aleph, which deals with the encounter, the confrontation between David HaMelech and Goliath, the Philistine warrior. Also, I guess his fame is also in the fact of his major physical proportions. Let's now continue in the Gemara. The Mishnah had said that the Plishtim, the Philistines, had come, had approached battle with the, we'll say, the assuredness of having Goliath at their helm, and his battle success. Goliath, and here the Gemara looks at the name. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Shomad Begilui Ponim Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word Goliath is based on the word Gilui, literally something one exposes himself. Here, it has to do with chutzpah, where a person has no self-restraint. Chutzpah, nerve. He was a Baal Chutzpah to the Almighty. Shenemar, Goliath says, Bru lachem ish v'yered elai. In challenging the Jewish army that was headed by King Saul at the time, Shaul HaMelech, so he says, choose, bru is to choose, choose an ish, and come down upon me. Now, v'ein ish, the word ish, is in fact Ela Kodesh Baruch, the reference to the Almighty. What was Goliath saying? He was saying to them, I know that everyone wants to translate the word Ish as a man, but the word Ish can also be the Almighty Himself. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Hashem Ish, Milchama, says the Almighty is a man, is a an Ish. Maybe we can't translate it as man, obviously, so we just have the word Ish. He's an Ish of war, of battle. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hearing this blasphemous Philistine, he says, "Hareini mapilo al yad ben ish." You're saying choose an ish. I'm going to cause your downfall at the hands of a son of an Ish. Shenemar, v'David ben Ish Ephrasi Hazeh. In other words, you're claiming that you can battle an Ish. I'm going to cause you to fall at the hands of even a lesser entity, a ben Ish. And that's a reference to David. And I'm sure everyone is familiar with the story that David, in fact, defeated Goliath. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir, B'shloisha mekoimos lachdu piv la'oisei rasha. On three occasions, that wicked man, namely Goliath, he said things that were actually self-defeating. The words of the Gemara, lachdu piv, literally, lachdu is to be entrapped by his own mouth. He said things that, we'll say, have a double entendre that could be understood two ways. And here the Gemara lists off the examples. Echad, he said, "Bru lochem ish v'yered elai." Now the expression "v'yered elai," Rashi says, has a ring to it of olai. That means have a man and let him come down upon me. That namely an indication that the one that you choose will defeat me. So he's indicating already ahead of time that I will be defeated. He should have said, as Rashi says, choose a man v'yilochem iti and let him battle with me, not v'yered elai. Number two, v'idach, the second of the three points that Rabbi Yochanan alluded to, Goliath says, im yuchal yilochem iti v'hikani v'chulei. The word vihikani means, and he will smite me, he will beat me. Even though he goes on to say, Rashi says, and if I defeat him, then such and such and such and such. Nevertheless, the problem here that he brought upon himself is that his opening remark was, choose someone and let's see if he can come and smite me. That was his opening route. That's Rashi calls that the psichas piv. His opening remark was a remark that could be understood as himself being defeated. V'idach, a third example, to come alei leDavid, he said to David, "Hakelev anochi ki'atabo elai b'maklos." Am I a dog that you're approaching me with sticks? So he referred to himself as a dog that can be beaten back with mere sticks. The Gemara asks, David Nami Omar Lei. David himself said, "Ata bo elai becherev bechanis ubekidon." You're coming to fight me with these military arms, with a sword, a spear, and a kidon. The Gemara says, "No, you can't ask a question from David Amelech." In trying to parallel him to what Goliath said, David Hoder Omerle, David continued saying, "Vonochi bo elecho b'shem Hashem tzvokis elikei ma'achos Yisrael asher chirafta." I am coming upon you in the name of God, the Lord of Israel's battles that you blasphemed. Now Rashi explains. Well, let's look at Rashi a few lines up from here. David hoder komarle vani bo v'einzu psichas pelero di omarle ata bo limshol bi al yedei dover shein bo mamish vani bo limshol b'cho b'shem shehanitzchonos shelo. But David Hamelech, when saying that you are coming upon me with these arms, he was saying you are coming upon me with nothingness. David wasn't saying. Wasn't opening his remarks with something that actually is a threat to David. Because as far as David is concerned, the cherev, the chanas, and kido are dover she'ein bo mamish. It has no substance when I, David, am coming with the Lord to my side. We continue with Psukim dealing with Goliath. Vayigash haplishti hashkem v'erev. The pasuk says, in the we'll say the confrontation between Golius and the Jewish people was a drawn out type confrontation where every morning and evening until the actual battle between them, he would draw near, he would appear and threaten the Jewish people. And the Pesuk makes specific reference to Hashkem, morning, early in the morning, and Harav in the evening. Omer of Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan explains, Kedei levatlon mikriyashma shachris va'arvis. His whole tactic was, and this ties in directly to what we saw at the bottom of Omed Aleph, his whole tactic was to cause them miss the recitation of Kriya Shema, Shachris, and Arvis. How interesting it is to note that the Goyim, these Gentiles, knew the secret, the potential secret of, or I should say, the secret of potential Jewish success. As we saw, I mentioned earlier, the Almighty says that even if you have the merit of just Kriya Shema, Shachris, and Arvis, you won't be given into their hands. And this enemy figure knew that and wanted to prevent them from having that merit, and hence he would come with his threatening presence every morning and evening to cause them to avoid or to forget saying the Kriya Shema Shachris V'Arvis. Continuing in the Gemara, the Pesuk says, Vayisyatze Varboim Yom. And he assumed his position, as we just described, over a period of 40 days. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Keneged Arboim Yom Shenitro Nitno Bohen Torah. The 40 days that he was trying to gain advantage of was Keneged the, was, we'll say, opposite the 40 days that the Jewish people waited till they received the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was on Mount Sinai for a period of 40 days in order to receive the Torah, and Rashi says, "Keneged arboim yom sheichro Torah liskabel nitan lo kayach lisyatze." From the point that they arrived, let's say at Mount Sinai, till they actually received the Torah, that 40-day period was a time in which he was it's an amount of time that the enemies of the Jews can be said to be empowered, and hence he was trying to capitalize on that. Of course, these weren't simultaneous occasions historically, but nevertheless, the 40-day length of time is representative of a time in which the Jewish people might be vulnerable, because that's the amount of time during which they were in the position to receive the Torah and yet had not received it. The Torah and Torah observance, that should be made clear and unequivocal, is the sole source of Jewish strength. One should not make the lethal mistake for one second in thinking that the Jewish people have strength in technology and modern warfare and arms. It's true that these things are used, but that's because in Olam Hazeh people have to go through the motions, the natural motions. But the true strength of the Jewish people is in the Torah, in the spiritual realm. And one doesn't have to be too intelligent to realize and to conclude thusly, after thousands of years in exile at the mercy of hideous Gentile powers and emperors and empires throughout the ages, in a ceaseless attempt to annihilate, eradicate, and erase the Jewish people from the face of the earth, and the Almighty foiled all their plans, with the Jews having no arms, no armies, no national entities behind them, And as we just indicated, the Jewish people survived. It's true, many casualties along the way, but at the same time, all those enemy forces don't even exist today. New ones come to replace them. But the old Jewish people persist, and it's only because of the Torah and its observance. The more Torah observance, the better we are. Let's continue in the Gemara. Vayetze ish habeinayim mimachnois plishtim golius shmo migas. My binayim. And the Pasuk said ish habeinayim. What does that refer to? And the double underline series marking are, we'll see here, four approaches to explaining what that means in the context of Golias. Omar Rav she mevune mikol mum. He was blemish free. Mevune means built up. He was a complete individual without any physical detraction or deficiency. Ushmuel Omar beinoni shebe echav. He was an average one amongst his brothers. Later we'll see in the Gemara he was one of four brothers, and as imposing and fearsome a figure as Golias was, he wasn't the biggest of them. Debei Rabbi Shilo Omar Shihu Osui Kibinyan. He was built like a building. So Beinayim, Isha Beinayim, has to do with a built structure. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Bar Meo papi v'chado nani. Now these words, papi and nani, they're not Hebrew words. Rashi indicates at one point that nani is a Persian word. The Isha Beinayim, Rashi explains, but first we'll translate the Gemara. His mother, we'll see later on that her name was Orpah. Orpah, in fact, is a female figure that might be known to some of you from the book of Ruth. She was the sister-in-law of Ruth, who had accompanied, would become the one of two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah of Naomi. This woman, Orpah, was a woman that was engaged extensively in an immoral lifestyle. And on any given night, so she could have been, accompanied by 100 men, and only one of them was the actual father of Golias. So that Rashi explains, Bar Meo Popi V'chad Nani Ben Hataruvis. He's the son of a confused situation. Shibo harbe anoshim alimo balaylachas. Many men had intimacy with her, with Orpah in one night. Venis abro min echod, and she was impregnated though only by one. Nimsa ho echod aviv v'kulon minafim. It turns out then that only one of those many men was his actual father, and all the rest were men of ill repute, were minafim. The word Ish Habeinayim, Rashi explains, means Shiyotza Mibein Anoshim Harbe. He came forth, he was born from amongst many men, as we just explained. So Beinayim means Mibein, from amongst many males that happened to have intimacy with his mother, with Golias' mother, so he's the product of one of those. The Pasuk says, the Golias Shmo Migas. This is a reference to the Pasuk we quoted just above, where we wrote this in between the lines. You can see we have arrows indicating where you can see this having been quoted earlier. The fact that the Pasuk refers to him as, in this way, in Golias Shmo, his name was Golias from Gas. When you read the Pasuk superficially, it simply means he was, that was the community, the name of the community from which he was, Gas. But the Gemara Darshins, Tani Rav Yosef, and we're starting a section of Gemara. A number of lines are dedicated to the mother of Golias. Her name was Orpah, and her behavior. We saw already an allusion to her morals, her standards, just a moment ago in Rabbi Yochanan's description. So Rav Yosef says that referring to Golias as coming migas is actually a hint to his mother's immoral lifestyle. A gas is a wine press. And as we go on in the Gemara, in this section, we might have to exercise, we'll say, a little mental imagery as we'll say a compensation for spelling things out in there in graphic imagery. So a gas is a press, a wine press, where pressure is placed upon the grapes. They're trampled under, and that produces wine. So Rav Yosef says, Shakol doshin es imoi kegas. All would, we'll say, would be in intimacy, which involves this kind of, we'll say, a pressure idea, without elaborating in any more graphic forms. So she was also like grapes in a press in terms of her moral conduct. Ksiv me'oros v'karinon marchos. Many times in the scriptures you see words are written one way, but the actual pronunciation based on oral traditions is another. So here, the word that we would read as marchos, marchos would mean the military troops or battle configurations, is simply written without the chof. Tony Rav Yosef. Again, you see Rav Yosef offering an explanation. She hakol he'eru b'imo. He'eru is an expression referring to intimacy. So all had intimacy with his mother. We explained this before under the name of Rabbi Yochanan as well. Ksiv Horpa, Uksiv Arpa. This is the name we've been referring to already. Later we see that she was the mother of Golias. So in the scriptures, she is written sometimes with a hay and sometimes with an ayin. Rav Ushmuel, Chad Omar Horposhma. One of the two opinions says that her birth given name was Horpa. Veloma Nikra Shma Orpa. Why is she referred to as Orpa when that wasn't her actual birth given name? Shakul Urfin Oiso Meacharel. Once again, a description of her moral conduct. Orpa, an Oref, is coming from behind. The back of one's, we'll say, the back of one's head is called the Oref Rosho. You have the term Eglo Arufa, where in the Eglo Arufa ceremony, which is the name of the next perek, the last perek of Soita, a calf's neck is broken, is cut with an axe in that particular ceremony. But for our purposes, it means from the back of the head. So and for specifically in this Gemara, it means from behind. So that in terms of her, we'll say her moral conduct and intimacies that she was involved with, she was like an animal where copulation takes place from behind. Rav, we continue in our Gemara. We had a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and the Chad Omar Orpa Shma, that her real name was Orpa, Veloma Nikra Shma Horpa, Shakol Doshin Oiso Karifos. We saw before the expression Doshin, like in a gas, has to do with crushing, with pressing on something, and she was, the word Horpa is associated with the Harifos. Harifos is a term referring to crushed wheat, crushed grains. And you see the use of that word, harifos, in the following two examples that the Gemara provides, and just bear in mind that that's to be tied into Orpah and why she was referred to by the word Harpa, which wasn't her actual name according to this opinion. V'chein hu omer v'tikach isha v'tifrois hamosach al pnei ha-be'er v'tishtach oleh harifos. This pasuk is in a totally different context. It's from Shmuel Beis. It's also Perek Yud Zayin, but it's in the second book of Samuel, where a woman was hiding some men that went into a pit, that she covered the pit with some cloth, and upon that, to camouflage their hiding, she scattered upon the cloth covering the pit some harifos. Harifos are crushed grains, making their hideaway totally unsuspecting. The Iboya Sema Mehacha, another pasuk where the word harifos appears, and the definition of something being crushed, as represented by that word, is seen in this pasuk, which says, "Im tichtosh es ho'evil ba'machtesh." Machtesh is a crushing device, a pestle. Besoch harifos ba'eli. And again, the word eli, the eli is a pestle, a mortar and pestle, I should say. Then harifos being that which is crushed. V'es arboas eile yuldu laharpo begas vayiplu bi'adovid u'bi'ad avodov. This posuk is from Shmuel Beis. So it's not, it's a posuk that's much later, where the scriptures describe David and his victories, and it mentions the four that were born to Harpah in Gas, and who had fallen into the hands of David and his servants. Mind you, who are the four? Omar, Rav Chisda. Here are their names: Sof, Umodon, Golias, Vayishbi Benov, Vayiplu. The Gemara is now going to describe this, we'll say this relationship between David, who was the victor over these four warrior, gallant figures, the sons of Orpah. In a technical sense, there's a let's say in a biological sense, if you will, there's a type of let's say family relationship between these people. David's great grandmother, I say family relationship in the following sense, that David's great grandmother was a co-wife of these gentlemen's mother. The pasuk says, as we just read, that they fell as victims to David and his servants. Dichtiv. Here, the Gemara elaborates on that, on this relationship between David being the victor and these men being the victims. Dichtiv. The pasuk in the book of Ruth, which, as far as chronology is concerned, we just mentioned that Ruth was David's great grandmother. And it says there, with the two daughters-in-law of Naomi in the first parak of Ruth, and we know that one departed and the other, Ruth, continued with Naomi back to Eretz Yisrael. It says there, Vatishak Orpo lechamoisa v'rus dovka ba. One of the two daughters-in-law, after the urgings of Naomi to abandon her, go back, leave me be. So Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, that's Naomi, and left. But Ruth clinged unto her. She did not depart. Omer Yitzchok, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yavo b'nei haneshuka, v'yiplu b'yad b'nei hadavuka. The Almighty willed it that let the children of the kissing woman, Orpah, who kissed her mother-in-law and departed, fall victim to the descendants of the woman who did not depart. That's Ruth, who clinged unto Naomi. Dorash Rava Bishar Arba Demois Shehorida Orpa Al Chamoisa, in the merit of four tears that Orpa shed in departing from her mother-in-law Naomi, she was Zocha, she merited V'yotzimena Arba Giborim, four warrior figures came from her. And there's a concept that you find elsewhere in the Shas, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekapech Schar Kol Briya. The Almighty, when it comes to rewarding, the Almighty provides schar, reward, payment for even the most minor gestures and actions that a person may commit. Even if the person is wicked and evil, if they did something meritorious, even if it's a mere gesture, they will get reward. Needless to say, there's also punishment on the same, we'll say, on the same scale as a precision and scrutiny on the part of the Almighty. The reference that Rava made to the four tiers are based on Psukim. The pasuk that Gemara cites here is Shenemar Vatisoeno Kolon Vativkeno Oid, and they raised their voices. These are the daughters-in-law of Naomi, and they cried again. So that expression of crying again indicates there was a previous crying. And Rashi makes reference to this, that there was a second crying that's you see in this particular pasuk, which is pasuk Yud Dalet. You will find, if you look at pasuk Tes, just a few psukim before, it says Vatisoeno Kulon Vativkeno, a first crying. When a person cries, tears come from two eyes. So if there are two cryings, that's two cryings. Each time two eyes, two times two, four. Four tears that were shed by Orpa, enabling her to merit having four warrior children. The pasuk says, "Ksiv chetz chaniso," in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Zayin, in describing the arms that Goliath had at his disposal, it says that chetz chaniso v'karinon. The way we read that, we didn't translate it yet. Chetz chaniso, but the way it's read is aitz chaniso. A chanis is a spear. So the word chetz is an arrow, but the way we read it is a tree was his spear. In other words, the man was of such physical proportion that he would that he had at his command a spear that was the size of a tree. And Omar Abul Azar Adayin lo higanu lechatzi shvachos sheloi surasha. In these massive descriptions, we haven't even reached half of the... Well, shvacho literally means the praise. It's this grandiose description of that wicked man. Mikan, from what was just said by Rebbe Lozer, that we haven't even said half of what we could say about the proportions of that wicked man, Mikan, from here we conclude she'osur l'saper b'shvachon shel rishoyim. It's prohibited to embellish. I'll use the word praise, but I'm not sure that it has a certain. It doesn't actually capture the fine meaning of what the Gemara is saying. It has to do with expressions and descriptions of empowering nature that one is prohibited from doing thusly with regard to the wicked. The Gemara says, if then we have such reticence to describing the wicked in such grandiose terms, v'lo liftach beklal, so let's say nothing about him. After all, we did say that his spear was like that of a tree, was the size of a tree. That already is a shevach of a rasha. So the Gemara says, well, we have to do some v'lodoe shvachei de David, to show the praiseworthiness of David, who was willing, though David was a person of of limited physical proportion was willing to go into battle with such an with such a staggering figure as Goliath, we then appreciate David all the more by knowing at least some of the grandiose descriptions that accurately describe Goliath. Bnei Amon bo v'nitzchonu shel shovach. Ksiv shovach uksiv shofach. Again, you have psukim referring to the same person. In Sefer Shmuel, in the book of Samuel, he's referred to by the term shovach. And in the book of Chronicles, in Divrei HaYomim, he's referred to, the same person is referred to by the term shofach. Rav Ushmuel. We're using this diamond marking to highlight the names Rav and Shmuel. You can see, again, there's a machlokus that they have regarding another pasuk. So Rav Ushmuel Chadomar Shofach Shmo, one of the two rabbis says that his real name was Shofach. The Loma Nikra Shmo Shofach, why is he referred to at times? Why is that simply a point of reference? That's not his actual name, but why is he called? If you like, you can see why as a nickname was he called Shofach. Shosui Kishofach, he was physically tall, like a shovach is a bird coop. A bird coop is a structure that's built often on stilts. So it's a tall, imposing structure, certainly in the context of a human description. So his name was really shovach, but his physical stature was like that of a shovach. V'charomar shovach shmo. His real name was Shovach. The Loma Nikra Shmo Shofach. Why was he called? Why was he nicknamed Shofach? Shekola Roy Oiso. Anyone who would see him, Nishpach Lefonov Kikiton. Literally, would spill out like a flask of liquid. In other words, one would be overcome with fear from seeing the likes of this guy whose real name was Shovach, and they would like lose control of their bowels. By merely being in his presence. The pasuk says, Ashposoi kekever posuach kulom giborim. This is a reference to the armies of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the Babylonian emperor that's featured in this pasuk in the book of Yirmiyahu. Rashi on this, Ashposo kekever posuach b'chayos shivuchan seksiv. Since we were already involved with a disagreement between Rav and Shmuel regarding psukim that were relevant to us at the time. In other words, we the first machlokas Rav and Shmuel that we see here has to do with the names of the individual, the warrior mentioned in our Mishnah. So here we go on to another pasuk that they disagree over, even though it doesn't have any direct relevance to our Mishnah. The pasuk described the warriors of Nebuchadnezzar. And Rav Shmuel v'Amri Lo, another version of names, and here we're using a triangle to highlight these names, Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi. You see later they appear again in a controversy over explaining a pasuk. So the other version of names concerning this pasuk is Rav Ami and Rav Asi. Chad Omar b'shosh shezorkim chetz oisin ashposus shel chalolim. We didn't translate the pasuk literally, but an ashpo, if I'm not mistaken, is a quiver, a vessel that usually contains arrows. But for drosha purposes, one opinion says that when they, the warriors of Nebuchadnezzar, would shoot arrows, they would be such accurate marksmen, their arrows would result in many, many victims, creating piles and piles. An ashpa is a garbage heap, usually. In this case, it's piles and piles of halolim, of victims, of killed victims. V'shema tomar, you might say she'umnim bikrav. You might say that all they were simply expert marksmen, but not necessarily physically imposing warriors. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Kulam Giborim. They were all strong, not just expert marksmen, but they also bore physical prowess, physical strength. And I believe it's we can apply the idea we saw before when we said Lodoy Shvachid David. Here too, we have to know descriptions of the enemies of Israel in order to appreciate that when they were defeated, how great a defeat it actually was. V'chadomar, we continue in the Gemara, B'shal she'oisin sorcheim, when the warriors of Nebuchadnezzar would relieve themselves, oisin ashposus ashposus shel zevel, they would make piles and piles of human waste. But this is again a description of their physical size and the amount of food that they would have to consume and the natural result of all of that food consumption. V'shema Tomar, you might say, well, they created a lot of human waste because they had weak digestive systems. They suffered from digestive ailments. Not so. Talmud Lomar, Kulam Giborim. The Pasuk said they were all warriors. They weren't sickly individuals. Omar of Mori, Shma Mino, Haiman de Nofish Zivle. From this discussion, you can conclude that in general, one who produces a lot of waste, one who's diuretic, a lot of waste comes from Choli Me'ayim Hu. He is suffering from a digestive ailment. Lamai nafkamina. What practical application does this information have? Litrach benafshe. We look at Rashi, litrach benafshe, levakesh lo refuos. We will then know this will be a sign, a symptom. In other words, the large amount of human waste that a regular person is producing is a sign of some type of digestive ailment, thereby signaling those around him to seek out the appropriate medicinal treatment. Terem yichbad choyolov, before the ailment becomes too severe. We continue. Da'ago b'levish yisocheno, a posik in Mishlei, two opinions, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Chalamar, yisocheno midato. Maybe you're familiar with the term Hesech Hadas, means to put it out of your mind. That if a person feels a sense of fear, of worry, he should put it out of his mind. That's one opinion. That's what this opinion explains as the meaning of the word Yisochena. V'chad Omar, another approach is Yisochena L'achirim. If a person has worries, in order for himself to lighten his emotional burden, he should discuss it with others. So the word Yisochena Mortsiach means a conversation, a discussion. And that will help to alleviate his worries. V'atem i'atem kein k'ashem eloikechem haholechim ochem. The Moshuach Mechoma tells the Jewish army that in contrast to the heathens that are relying on all kinds of mortal strength, you come with the Almighty, Haholech Imochem, the Almighty who walks with you. The Gemara asks, V'chol Kach Loma, and Rashi explains this question what the Gemara is asking about is what is the significance of this description of the Almighty as one who walks with you. The term walking has a certain, we'll say, literal connotation, and to describe the Almighty as walking is a little bit difficult. So what does it mean? The Gemara answers, Mipnei Shehashem V'chol Kinuyov. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Gimel, Munochim Ba'oron. We mentioned a holy ark that would accompany the Jews into battle. Within the confines or amongst the contents of this holy ark, there was the Almighty's name. That's the shame of Hashem, and Kinuyim are alternative names that were all written out and put into this particular Oron that accompanied them into battle. So there's the idea of Hashem walking with them. It's a reflection upon this holy ark containing God's names that literally walked with them, that walked and accompanied them into battle in a physical sense. The Gemara continues at the top line of Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, V'chein Hu Omer, and likewise it says in the Milchemes Midyan. This is already back to the Chumash itself. Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Vav. It says Vayishlach Oisom Moshe Elef Lamate Latzava Oisom V'es Pinchas. And the Gemara, the pasuk goes on to say, you might note that we have a star on indicating to look at the side. It says regarding this battle. A battle with the Midianites. Osam ves Pinchas, and on the side Pinchas ben Olazar Hakohen Latzavol Klei Hakodesh v'chatzotros Hatrua biyado. The reason we've written in the pasuk is you'll see as the Gemara continues, different phrases are referred to beyond that which is printed in the Gemara itself. So it says that they Vayishlach Osam Moshe Osam they Elu Sanhedrin. Very, very interesting to see who went into battle. The Sanhedrin is the high court. Pinchas, that's the name of Aaron's grandson, he was Zeh Moshuach Milchoma. He was the Kohen, anointed for battle purposes. Uklei HaKadosh, Zeh Aaron V'Luchos Shebo. That's a reference to the Holy Ark and the tablets contained therein. V'Chatzotzros HaTrua, that the Pasuk referred to. That, of course, is you have to read the continuation of the Pasuk, as we indicated before, just like Klei Kodesh was part of that continuation. Chatzotzot Trua Elu HaShofros. That's a reference to the shofar that was used in battle. Tana, Lo Lechinam Holach Pinchas L'Muchoma. The Pasuk that we featured above had Pinchas going into battle against the Midianites. It wasn't for naught that Pinchas was the one to go into that battle. Elo lipora din avi imo. He was there to take vengeance for that which happened to his avi imo, his mother's father. And that's a reference to Yosef. Shenemar, the pasuk says, v'amidonim mochru oso el mitzrayim. The midonim, or the midyonim, the Midianite caravan had sold Joseph down to Mitzrayim. Of course, in the well-known episode, the story involving the brothers of Yosef selling him, and it seems that he was sold from one caravan to another, and in the chain of events, it says in the Chumash that he was sold by the Midyanim to Mitzrayim. And here you have a battle involving the Midianites. These are descendants of those people that were participatory in the sale of Yosef. And Pinchas is described here as being a descendant from Yosef through his mother, Avi Imo. Of course, we know Pinchas was a Kohen as well. Not the Kohen is from the tribe of Levi, not the tribe of Yosef. But when we speak about a tribal descent and identification of someone as a Kohen or non-Kohen, we look at who the father was. So Pinchas' father was Elazar, and whose father in turn was Aaron. However, there's a Yosef element to him because, as we saw in the source, Avi Imo, his mother's, and as Elazar had a wife, and that woman's father was from the tribe of Yosef. So that Pinchas has in him a Yosef element, making him the appropriate one to represent the Jewish people as the Moshuach Milchoma in a battle against the Midianites that had sold his predecessor, Yosef, to Mitzrayim. The Gemara asks, L'meimro de Pinchas mi Yosef osi? The topic heading that we have accompanying this Gemara is, in fact, on the side under the Nosei, where we've written Yehuso Shel Pinchas, the genealogy of Pinchas mi Yosef, mi Yisro. Who is he from? Is he from Yosef or possibly from Yisro? Yisro was famous as being, amongst other things, the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. In the Gemara we read, the Gemara had suggested he is a descendant from Yosef. So the Gemara asked, "Lemeimor the Pinchas mi Yosef asi?" Is that really so, that Pinchas was a descendant from Yosef? Oksiv. The pasuk says, "Velozer ben Aaron, lokach lo mi benos putiel lo liisha." Elazar's wife, hence Pinchas' mother, was Mibnos Putiel. She was from the daughters of Putiel. Now that Putiel name, I love the Osi Mi Yisro. Shepitem Agolim Lavidas Kechavim. The mother of Pinchas was a descendant of Yisro, not of Yosef, of Yisro. That Pitem, word Putiel. Pitem fattened up calves for sacrificial purposes to idols. Yisro was, in his early life, was a priest serving idols. Where do you see Yosef in Pinchas' background? The Gemara says, lo, the Benos Putiel that the Pasuk referred to is a reference to Yosef, mi Yosef shepipei b'Yitzro. It's a reference to Yosef, who was able to fight back his evil inclination. So Putiel, from where Pete Pate, was able to, as I say, to confront his Yetzirah, hence the reference to Benos Putiel, indicating Pinchas, in fact, a descendant from Yosef. The Gemara asks, V'halo shivotim mevazin oso? But is it not so that the other tribes in the time of Pinchas, they used to ridicule, they would ridicule him. And how did they ridicule him? They said, Risem ben Puti Zeh, you see this son of Puti, ben Shepitem Avi Imo Agolim Lavudas Kechovim, Yaharog Nosim Yisrael. We didn't mention this before, but if you are familiar with the Chumash, you know that Pinchas, he killed the head of the tribe of Shimon, Zimri by name, when Zimri had conducted, let's say, public immorality. Pinchas intervened and eliminated Zimri. And this infuriated many amongst the Jewish people. And they insulted Pinchas by saying, making insulting references to him, saying, You see this Ben Puti, whose predecessor, Ben Shepitem Avihimo, the son of someone whose grandfather, his maternal grandfather, fattened up Agolim Lois Gechovim, Yarog Nosim Yisrael. This guy was a descendant from idol worshippers, have the audacity to kill a prince amongst Israel, the head of a tribe. So we're back to square one. We're not clear on as to what Pinchas' pedigree was. Was he from Yosef or was he from Yisro? If you want the source above to make sense, which indicates the appropriateness of Yosef of Pinchas to be the Moshuv Mechom in a battle against Midian, it would be more convenient for us to refer to Pinchas as a descendant from Yosef and not Yisro. The Gemara answers as follows. The answer, you can see, is a long marking taking us to the Mishnah. Eloi avua diime mi Yosef, ime diime mi Yisro. In fact, both are true. He is from Yosef and he is from Yisro. The question of how is he from Yosef and how is he from Yisro, there are two possibilities. If the father of his mother is from Yosef, so the mother of his mother, when we say his, it means Pinchas' mother, the mother of his mother is from Yisro. And the ime mi Yosef, and if the mother of his mother is from Yosef, avod ime mi Yisro. Now, with this answer, we're in effect saying that when Elazar is described as having taken as a wife mi benos Putiel, the word Putiel then has relevance to Yisro and has relevance to Yosef, to both of them. The Gemara says, Daikonami. And in fact, if you read the verses carefully, you can see an indication that Elazar's wife descended from both. The Pasuk says, Dichtiv Mibnos Putiel. It's written with a Yud in it, and not simply Putiel or Putael or Putiel without a Yud. The Yud indicates multiple elements. Trei Mashma, minimum of plural is two. Shma Mino, so that when she is described as being from the daughters of Putiel, it's a reference to two Putis. One is Yisro, who is Mefate Magolim of his Gechavim, and the other one is Yosef, who is Pitpate B'Yitzro. B'Yitzro. Not Yisro, obviously. Yitzro with a Tzadi. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.